Lane came to him. He inched out, back to, craning left, leaning forward from the waist, looking away. He moved his front foot, inched out a little more. Reacher ignored him, concentrated exclusively on the MP5's sights. They were dotted with tritium and implied a geometry as real to Reacher as a laser beam piercing the night. Lane inched into it. First, the right-hand edge of his skull. Then a larger sliver. Then more. Then more. Then the front sight was on the bony ridge at the back of his head, dead on, centered. Lane was so close that Reacher could count every hair in his buzz cut. For half a second, he thought about calling Lane's name, making him turn around, hands raised, telling him why he was about to die, listing his many transgressions, like the equivalent of a legal process. Then he thought about a fight, man to man, with knives or fists, closure, something ceremonial, maybe something fairer. Then he thought about Hobart, and he pulled the trigger. A strange, blurred purr, like a sewing machine or a distant motorcycle at a light. A fifth of a second, 3 9-millimeter bullets, 3 ejected shell cases spitting out and arcing through the spill of bright light and jangling on the stones 20 feet to Reacher's right. Lane's head blew up in a mist cloud that was turned blue by the light. It flopped backward and followed the rest of his body straight down. The empty thump of flesh and bone hitting concrete was clearly audible, muffled only by cotton and canvas clothing. I hope Jade didn't see that, Reacher thought. Then he stepped into the doorway. Gregory was halfway through a fatal split second of hesitation. He had backed up, and he was looking left, but the shots that had killed Lane had come from the right. It didn't compute. His brain was locked.
"Shoot him," Jackson said.
Reacher didn't move.
"Shoot him,"
Jackson said again.
"Don't make me tell you what that table was for."
Reacher risked a glance at Taylor. Taylor nodded. Reacher glanced at Pauling. She nodded too, so Reacher put 3 in the center of Gregory's chest. Chapter 77. Cleanup took the rest of the night and most of the next day. Even though they were all bone-weary, by common consensus, they didn't try to sleep, except for Jade. Kate put her to bed and sat with her while she slept. The child had fainted early and had missed most of what had gone on, and seemed not to have understood the rest, except for the fact that her ex-stepfather had been cast as a bad man. But she had been told that already, and so it came as nothing more than confirmation of a view she was already comfortable with. So she slept, with no apparent ill effects. Reacher figured that if any arrived in the days to come, she would work them out with crayons on butcher paper. Kate herself looked like she had been to hell and back, and like many people, she was thriving on it. Going down there had felt really bad, and therefore coming back up again felt disproportionately better than really good. She had stared down at Lane's body for a long moment, seen that half his head was missing, understood for sure that there was going to be no Hollywood moment where he reared up again, back to life. He was gone, utterly, completely, and definitively, and she had seen it happen. That kind of certainty helps a person. She walked away from the corpse with a spring in her step. Taylor's right tricep was all torn up. Reacher cut his shirt away with the kitchen knife from his shoe and field-dressed the wound as best he could with a first aid kit in the upstairs bathroom. But Taylor was going to need attention. That was clear. He volunteered to delay it by a couple of days. The wound was not necessarily recognizable as a gunshot, and it was unlikely anyone in the neighborhood had heard anything, but it seemed smart to distance an ER visit from mayhem in the night. Jackson was okay, apart from cut eyebrows and some facial bruising and a split lip and a couple of loose teeth. Nothing worse than he had experienced half a dozen times before, he said, after bar fights wherever first para had been posted and where the local boys always seemed to have something to prove. Pauling was fine. Reacher had cut her ropes, and she had torn the tape off her mouth herself and then kissed him hard. She seemed to have had total confidence that he would show up and work something out. He wasn't sure if she was telling the truth or flattering him. Either way, he didn't mention exactly how close he had come to walking away on a phantom pursuit. Didn't mention how lucky it was that a stray peripheral glance at the driveway's surface had fired some random synapse in his brain. He searched the Toyota and found Lane's leather duffel, the one he had seen before in the Park Lane Hilton, the $800,000. It was all there, untouched. He gave it to Pauling for safekeeping. Then he sat on the floor, leaning back on the post that Kate had been tied to, 6 feet away from Gregory's corpse. He was calm. Just another night of business as usual in his long and spectacularly violent life. He was used to it. Literally. And the remorse gene was missing from his DNA. Entirely. It just wasn't there. Where some men might have retrospectively agonized over justification, he spent his energy figuring out where best to hide the bodies. They hid them in a 10-acre field near the northwest corner of the farm. Fallow land, hidden by trees, unplowed for a year. Jackson finished fixing the backhoe and then fired it up and drove off with headlights blazing. Started work immediately on a massive pit that needed to be 30 feet long, 9 feet wide, and 9 feet deep. A 90-yard excavation, because they had decided to bury the cars as well. Reacher asked Pauling, "Did you check the box for extra insurance?" She nodded. "Call them tomorrow. Tell them it was stolen." Taylor was walking wounded, so he was excused from heavy work. Instead, he scoured the whole area for every piece of physical evidence he could find. He came up with all that anyone could think of, including all 27 shell casings from Perez's MP5. Pauling scrubbed his blood off the upstairs hallway floor and replaced the shattered bathroom tile. Reacher piled the bodies inside the Toyota Land Cruiser. The sun had been up for hours before the pit was finished. Jackson had left a neat, graded slope at one end, and Reacher drove the Toyota down it and smashed it hard against the earth wall at the other end. Jackson drove the backhoe to the house and used the front bucket to jack the Mini up and shove it backward. He maneuvered it all the way to the pit and rolled it down the grade and jammed it hard against the Toyota's rear bumper. Taylor showed up with all the other items and threw them in the hole. Then Jackson started to fill it. Reacher just sat and watched. The sky was pale blue, and the sun was watery. There were thin, high clouds and a mild breeze that felt warm. He knew that in the flatland all around him, Stone Age people had been buried in long mounds called barrows, and then Bronze Age people, and Iron Age people, and Celts, and Romans, and Saxons, and Angles, and Viking invaders in long ships, and Normans, and then the English themselves for 1,000 years. He guessed the land could take 4 more dead. He watched Jackson work until the dirt hid the top of the cars, and then he walked away, slowly, back to the house. Exactly 12 months later, to the hour, the 10-acre field was neatly plowed and dusted pale green with a brand new winter crop. Tony and Susan Jackson and Graham and Kate Taylor were working the field next to it. The sun was shining. Back at the house, the 9-year-old cousins and best friends, Melody Jackson and Jade Taylor, were watching Jade's baby brother, a healthy 5-month-old boy named Jack. 3,000 miles west of Grange Farm, it was 5 hours earlier, and Lauren Pauling was alone in her Barrow Street apartment, drinking coffee and reading the New York Times. She had missed a piece inside the main section that reported the deaths of 3 newly arrived private military contractors in Iraq. Their names were Burke, Groom, and Kowalski, and they had died 2 days previously when a landmine exploded under their vehicle outside of Baghdad. But she caught a piece in the Metro section in which it was reported that the cooperative board at the Dakota building had foreclosed on an apartment after 12 consecutive months of unpaid monthly maintenance. On entering the apartment, they had found more than $9 million in a locked closet. 6,000 miles west of Grange Farm, it was 8 hours earlier, and Patty Joseph was fast asleep in a waterfront condominium in Seattle, Washington. She was 10 months into a new job as a magazine copy editor. Her perseverance and her relentless eye for detail made her good at it. She was seeing a local journalist from time to time. She was happy. Far from Seattle, far from New York City, far from Bishop's Pargeter, down in Birmingham, Alabama, Dee Marie Graziano was up early in a hospital gymnasium, watching her brother grasp his new metal canes and walk across the floor. Nobody knew where Jack Reacher was. He had left Grange Farm 2 hours after the backhoe had shut down, and there had been no news of him since.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of The Hard Way by Lee Child. Copyright 2006, Lee Child. Read by Dick Hill. Directed by Susie Breck. Engineered by Melissa Coates. Performance copyright 2006 by Brilliance Audio. Recorded by arrangement with the Bantam Dell Publishing Group, a division of Random House Incorporated. All rights reserved.